T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Mully and Hall, up early to start your day with Chicago Sports Talk.
I got
to
tell you, I'm absolutely loving it right now.
Oh, my God, my God.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
This is for you.
Let's go.
Swung on, hit in the air, left field and deep, back to the wall, and that's going to be a home run. A two-run home run, another breaking ball by Chatwood, and Kansas City now leads by a score of 6-0.
Tyler Chatwood should stay in the rotation. Look, he had a bad outing. He's going to have those. He was outstanding, one of the best pitchers in the National League the first two times out. I don't think you have to overreact to anything. I thought it was a creative conversation or idea, potentially, to look at how Chatwood is related to Quintana, which is related to the closer. Quintana pitched 35 pitches yesterday in a simulated game. He's going to pitch again on Tuesday. When he comes back, that's a nice problem to have, but I don't think any of those possibilities will include Tyler Chatwood either going back to the bullpen or being used in the ninth inning.
Mike Mulligan.
He's fearless, he's observant, and has great emotional intelligence.
David Hall.
He's a winner, he's intelligent, he's innovative, he has strong character.
Into left field, Eloy going back on it at the warning track, now coming back in, and it bounces off the turf. That's a fair ball. Eloy gets tangled up in the netting, and Yelich is to third. He's coming around third on his way home, and he's inside the park with a home run.
Well, unfortunately, Eloy would tell you that he probably should have had that.
You got a whole team full of potential DHs. I'm not overreacting. Eloy's a young lad, and he's got to be better at that, and hopefully he can improve. But you need that bat in the lineup. You need a place for him to play. You're not putting him out there for his defense. Louis Robert will cover that. So, no, I am not moving Eloy from the left field. I'm just not going to do it. You can't make me do it, and I won't let you do it.
Mully and Hall on 670 The Score.
Let's freaking go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Oh, my goodness gracious. A lot of fun this morning. A lot of controversy, as the English would say. They don't like to pronounce every word the way we do.
Yeah.
A lot of aluminium. I don't know how you feel.
Aluminium, that is the other one, right? My wife still says aluminium, I think, at times.
The other one that drives me nuts is, what exactly is your schedule?
Schedule. Yeah, a little schedule sounds a little...
I don't like schedule.
It seems a little more pretentious, I think, than it should be. But yeah, there are some things that come up, like my wife, who is from Scotland, as you know, and she will say things in a way that she says them. It reminds me that she did not grow up here. And I just, like, you know, I think that's pretty cool sometimes. But yeah, the schedule for the Bulls is not what we would like it to be in terms of their plan for the head coach. How's that?
Oh, David, are you watching the Rounders again?
Oh, no. The Rounders.
I don't know. It was an effort. It was me taking a shot.
Like the British equivalent of baseball. That's what Rounders.
That's why I threw that in there. So it's fun to talk about basketball, and it's fun to talk about the bubble. And, you know, KC just kind of, we should have stopped and discussed it more, but he kind of went through this idea if they're having a mini camp, if they're having. So I think that's what's, in my opinion, this is the way this is going to work out. The resolution for the Delete Eight is not a bubble, but it is allowing them into the facility and allowing guys to kind of practice and just get some time on the court together in their own kind of mini bubble at their practice facility. I would imagine there will be some sort of announcement along those lines moving forward, because you can't stay off the court for this length of time. At some point, they're going to have to allow those teams to do some stuff together. And I know that's not playing other teams and it's not actual competition along the same lines, but it will be some vague form of compromise they'll have to make.
Absolutely. And those are kind of things that are part of the discussion. And the other big thing that obviously we had him on to talk about was the Sun-Times story about the fact that the Bulls are likely to hold on to Jim Boylan because of financial reasons, mm-hmm. and they don't want to pay two coaches. And KC has been consistent all along with kind of projecting this to be the case and not assuming that they would be going out and hiring, you know, the hot assistant or getting somebody else who was a retread to come in and replace Jim Boylan. And Jim Boylan might be part of the process. And I think it's interesting on a couple levels, Mully, things that we just talked to KC about. First of all, this idea that the player's input might not be as valued as we assume that it would be, because of the fact that maybe they're not in love with the players who are giving them the feedback on Jim Boylan. And I think that's one thing to consider. How sold is the new regime on the core that the Bulls have put together? And are they persuaded enough by what they have to say to make a change if the feedback is negative enough to kind of, you know, precipitate or force or compel that change? I don't know the answers to this question because they're never going to, you know, reveal that. But I thought that was something interesting that he kind of introduced into the equation.
Yeah, I like that idea because some of those players might not be here, might not be part of the big plan. We kind of know who they are that might or might be here, but there are some guys that definitely aren't going to be here. I don't think Otto Porter Jr. is going to be here for the long stretch. I think his time is coming to an end. But they're all going to be around for the next season or so, right? Everybody's under contract. I think what's fascinating is this idea. I just remember, you know, was it the Coaching Alliance or something that I saw on the day that the NBA restarted, and everybody was, you know, there was some social statement being made, and they just showed all the coaches, and Jim Boylan is one of those guys. And the Sesame Street song came into my head, you know, one of those guys just ain't like the other. One of those guys doesn't belong. And that is the feeling I think people have. There is a general sense that Jim Boylan is in over his head or shouldn't have that job or isn't the guy that's going to. And it has nothing to do with the passion he feels or the love of the sport and how emotional he gets about stuff and how much he wants to win. It just doesn't seem like his tactics and the way he's going about things are actually needed in the modern NBA. He doesn't seem like the guy. So if you believe that it's inevitable that he's got to go, and you hire a new front office and he doesn't go, people will automatically say it's got to be about the money. What else could it be about?
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child.
Let's not be mistaken here. I mean, I am not in any way saying that this is the right decision or would be the right direction to go, because if you bring Jim Boylan back to be your head coach, I think that it only delays the inevitable. And I think it damages the credibility of your new regime. I think it interrupts the momentum that you've experienced in this offseason. And I think it kills a Bulls buzz because everything is different except for the guy on the bench. And you're right. Which one doesn't belong? I'd like to hear you sing that Sesame Street song one day.
I don't know
how you can't spin this as progress. And that's the problem, because everything else that has happened to the Bulls this offseason, you qualifies as such, but not this, not now. And I think it is financially, it's a financial move. You understand it if you don't like it, but I think we all assumed money wouldn't get in the way, but it seems like that is the only reason that would I don't think there are basketball reasons you could point to and think that this makes any sense at all.
And let's go a step further. I mean, staying with the Sesame Street thing, I don't have to count for you like the count for you to figure out that they don't have the numbers in the front office that we thought were coming, right?
I love the count. I love the count.
Count
them.
I tried to have continuity, and I froze you.
I know, and now I'm stuck in like this Sesame Street loop, and I'm seeing Oscar the Grouch and Cookie Monster. And...
Oh, boy. I won't go big bird on you.
We digress.
But I mean it. That, you know, they were coming in, and it was going to be like a new team that was going to be in the front office. It wasn't just Arturis Kardashovas. It wasn't just Mark Eversley. And, you know, they've got about four people, but I thought it was going to be about 10. I thought they were going to have all sorts of different player development, and maybe they will. Maybe eventually they will. But I think, you know, hearing what Jerry Reinsdorf said recently about money and how, you know, the shortfall on both sides of town, and then seeing that they've made these changes, but they haven't done anything with the coach, and they're not adding to that front office in the fashion in which I thought they were going to, or adding positions that I thought they were going to, kind of upgrading and updating, if you will, the NBA league-wide pluses. That is giving me a little bit of a problem. It's giving me a slight headache. Now, I get it. Like we said, there's not going to be a great change in the roster because they don't have a lot of moves they can make. They could probably try to make a trade, but that would be about it. And if they didn't trade, they would be basically trading away their only legitimate assets as opposed to getting rid of guys that don't fit here.
Let's face it. Nobody wants to hear an owner, a chairman, anybody affiliated with the Bulls ownership or management group cry poor when you have a franchise that was valued in February by Forbes at $3.2 billion with a billion dollars, you know, worried about paying a coach $1.6 to walk away. That just is not something that's compatible in the minds of Bulls fans. Everything else that you have done represents progress, except this. If you're willing to take those hits, then fine. Your reality is going to be affected, and your perception is going to be ruined. And you're exactly right. And I thought that was another interesting point you brought up to KC. Jerry Reinsdorf doesn't care and never has, and he still won't, about the perception of the Chicago Bulls franchise, because if he did, I don't think Jim Boylan would still have a job.
Let's get to Tony from Wonder Lake. 312-644-6767 is the telephone number. Morning, Tony. How are you?
Hey, Tony.
Good morning, guys. Happy Friday to you. You guys know I'm a frequent flyer, and I'm not going to throw a curveball past you guys. You guys have been involved, especially you, Mo. You've been watching Chicago sports your whole life. Okay, this is what happens when a guy gets into town in the 80s and is a fixture. Okay, he handles things a certain way. It's not about the money. For him, it's about the control. The guy has to have his guy in place so he can control things from afar. I know Michael is taking care of most of the day-to-day operations, this and that, but the bottom line is the old man is the puppet master. He is loyal to a fault. You look at the situations that we have with the Bulls. It took a disaster where it's an absolute embarrassment that they weren't invited to the bubble to make a change in the front office. The first thing you do in those situations is a coach goes with them. That's just the way other teams do things, but not if you're Jerry Reinsdorf. Look at the situation.
I think we lost Tony, but
I think we lost Tony.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, I don't think of Jerry Reinsdorf as an out of town owner coming in and you know, I get it. He wasn't born here and didn't grow up here, but boy, he's been here a long time.
Yeah, how long does that last? You know, come on. I mean, yeah, the out of town thing is ridiculous.
Well, yeah, you get to 40 years or so, and yeah, it's hard to keep looking at it that way. But it's an interesting idea, the idea that Jerry is calling shots behind the scene. I don't believe that. I think Jerry's is kind of getting on, and I think he trusts the people around him, and including his son. And I just don't see him as the puppet master. How old is Jerry?
83, I believe.
84. Yeah, I just think he's got to be
84?
Getting...
84? Did I miss a birthday? Oh, darn it.
I don't know. You would think he's spending more time in Arizona.
Just sent a card.
And maybe he's spending more time with the baseball team than he is the basketball team.
We appreciate the phone call, but it's a false narrative. This is Michael Reinsdorf's deal now. This has been his project. He did the research, if you remember, going back to the All-Star Game weekend. That seems like last year, but it was only in February. And Michael Reinsdorf's fingerprints are all over this rebuild. Now, Jerry Reinsdorf may have a voice in these conversations about the financial picture moving forward, but I don't think he's... You know, the one that you look at as being behind this anymore. The last time he was as involved in the day-to-day stuff with the Bulls, I think, is when Tom Thibodeau left town. You know, ask Tom Thibodeau how loyal Jerry Reinsdorf is.
I got to tell you, though, what Tony is putting his finger upon is this idea that you hired a guy, but you're not letting him run the show. Oh, guess what? No, the dark forces still run everything. It's Lord Voldemort has a puppet. There is no actual, there's no power for the new head of basketball operation. That becomes the perspective because people are all waiting for the coach to go. And KC keeps saying, listen, there's plenty of time for that. Everything in its time. You know, you don't need to get ahead of yourself on any of this stuff. And people... What happens is every once in a while a story pops up and everybody goes, what? Wait a minute. He's still there? Wait. You light the torches. Let's march. And it's not going to happen. And it's not going to matter if it does.
What KC has continued to do consistently was remind us that there's a possibility, however hard it is for us to understand, there is a possibility that AK respects Jim Boylan, or at least is deliberate enough in his approach to evaluating people to give him an opportunity to prove everybody wrong or to prove himself, period, because he hasn't seen him coach, but he's done the research. So I think that I'm with you. I think that most people assume that Jim Boylan's a bad choice, but I don't think the Bulls' new, you know, decision maker or maybe the new front office is in agreement, because if they were, I think maybe he'd be gone by now.
All right, we're going to get our weekly conversation with Len Casper next. Mully and Haw on the score.
Here it comes.
Len Casper.
Deep drive. That ball is gone. A grand slam. Ian Happ makes it 5-1.
Cubs TV play-by-play man.
Can you bunt the ball onto Waveland? That's my question.
Way out of here. Hello, Sheffield.
Kevin Hart is here.
I'm going to tell you, because I don't know if anybody else has ever told you, you have an amazing voice, man. Goodness.
Thank you. Like got to hear him sing.
It's like a dove. If a dove could talk, this is what it would sound like. Yeah, that's exactly.
Never been told that.
Twitter.com/LenCasper.
Oh, baby, Chris Bryant. Deep drive. Way back. Ball game over. Cubs win.
Len Casper. Talking Cubs with Mully and Haw.
Seven in the score. Always a joy to talk to Len Casper. He joins us on the Alpha Monte Ford Hotline. Alpha Monte Ford in Melrose Park. Len, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, getting ready for Cubs Cardinals weekend, and it has a different feel this year, doesn't it? Because the Cardinals have been off for 9 days, and I think everyone's pretty curious to see how they will play after the big layoff. It's a little bizarre, but that's 2020 baseball, right?
Well, I think, you know, you're worried about the layoff. They're going to be undermanned, and you also make sure you're wearing your little face mask if anyone gets on first, Anthony Rizzo. I think all those things are something to be addressed, Len. I mean, good gracious, the Cardinals, not as bad as the Marlins, but certainly a team that has seen COVID-19 run through the group, and very disconcerting, and really it is just kind of scary for the team to be heading to St. Louis against that team and everything connected to it. It's such a reminder of the times we're living in.
Yeah, and I think from a baseball perspective, you could claim that, you know, they're catching them at a good time, and the Cubs have been playing well up until last night, obviously. But the health concern is the big one. And I saw a note that because they were stuck in their hotel for 6 days, I mean, a lot of those guys couldn't even work out. Jack Flaherty threw in his room against a mattress. That's all he could do to try to kind of keep his arm in shape. So, yeah, I think everyone's curious to see how this will go. MLB continues to crack down on the protocols and make everything a little bit more stringent. Based on what I've read, and I don't know what your perception of it is, there seems to be kind of an underpinning of not necessarily blame, but lessons learned that the Marlins and the Cardinals, there isn't a bubble per se, but there is kind of a bubble with the traveling party, and that that there may have been a leak here or there that could have led to the outbreaks on both teams. And I'm sensing that MLB feels that if everyone adheres to the new protocols, and Mike Schilt said yesterday that if you're not in the lineup, you won't be in the dugout. So I think they're going to keep even the bench players either, you know, in the stands or in their auxiliary dugout, you know, next to the normal dugout. And there's going to be very little in terms of celebration. I think the Cardinals and the Marlins in particular might take this now more seriously than anybody because they've experienced it firsthand.
Well, and also because I think everything that you hear, and I agree with you, Len, the perception has been created that it was a breach in protocol by those two specific teams that other teams in baseball haven't experienced. And to their credit, it almost reads and almost seems that's the sense that, okay, we've isolated these two teams, what happened. And now there seems to be a growing sense of confidence that because they've identified this, because they've dealt with this, even though there's going to be irregularities in the schedule, there seems to be a growing sense of confidence that maybe baseball can pull this off. Are you getting the same sense?
Yeah, because they've gone through so much already, David, and they've gotten through it. You know, I'm using the word plowing through. I think that feels like the last week or so. While they did pause the schedule for a few teams, for the most part, everybody else was able to get through it. You know, where I go with the protocol stuff is I would have a hard time believing in reality that 28 teams have followed every protocol to the letter of the law, so to speak, and that's why they haven't had a breakout. But I think human nature is that they probably did, and you know, those teams either got unlucky or maybe pushed it a little bit too much. But I think about hotel workers and people on buses and at the ballpark, obviously tier one people get tested, but there are a lot of other people and families when you do go home. So I think you can pretty much stay close to what the protocols are, but I still believe there's some luck involved. And it is a reminder for sure that when you're in close proximity with 40, 50 other people, that if one person has it and doesn't know it, it can spread very quickly.
Len, we were joking earlier that the Royals beating the Cubs was kind of like, you know, the Washington Generals are due. They're bound to win a game at some point. They had been losing a ton of games. And you knew, they're a Major League Baseball team at some point. They're going to get it right, and you kind of throw that one out. Is that a wrong way of looking at it in a 60-game run? But the Cubs have been so good and taking care of business so well. It's just, you're on the verge of this St. Louis series, all the other things going on. I think that's a permissible loss, although they did get beaten pretty badly.
Yeah, if you lose 3-2, do you feel better about it? Probably right. Not. There's a thing in baseball called regression to the mean, and that is when stuff gets out of whack one way or the other, the baseball gods kind of find a way to bring you down to earth. And, Tyler Chatwood, I didn't think his stuff was bad. It felt like it was the Royals' day. They had lost 6 in a row. They were scoring very few runs, but they have some weapons in their lineup, and it just felt like everything they hit found space or the seats or virtual fans or whatever. So, I think you take care of business. You win 3 out of 4 against a team you should beat after sweeping another team you should beat in the Pirates. And 10-3 is a record you would gladly take. Craig Kimbrell, a little bit better. You know, he gave up another run, did get a couple swings on a curveball, and I think it's just baby steps right now. And that's the silver lining, is that you're able to get him another inning of work.
Len, I mean this sincerely. I would imagine that it's difficult to describe what's going on with Craig Kimbrell, because you have a proud veteran who has had a Hall of Fame caliber career, and yet, to the naked eye, he doesn't have it. And when they keep going back to him up until his, you know, what he did last night in sort of a mop-up role, you wondered why at times. How challenging is it to describe what's going on with a player who obviously had high expectations and has had a great career but just isn't getting it done with the Cubs?
Yeah, it is baffling, the fact that, what, it's been 4 appearances, he's given up runs in all of them. The comp for me statistically would be Trevor Rosenthal, who is now with Kansas City. He had a run of, I think, 3 or 4 games last year in which he didn't record an out and gave up runs. The difference is he was coming back from Tommy John surgery. And you could very easily claim that he was rusty and had been off for so long that it wasn't quite right. And he's off to a pretty good start with the Royals. Now, if Kimbrell were throwing 93, it would be easy to pinpoint and say something's not right either. You know, the velocity's gone because there's just too many miles on the arm, or there's an injury. That's not the case. There's been outside speculation that maybe he's tipping his pitches because he hadn't gotten any swings on the curveball. From everything I've heard, I don't think the Cubs think he's doing that. It is really something every time someone squares one up, and there's a point where it can't just be bad luck. I do think when you're going poorly, if you make any mistake, it does get whacked. But I give him credit. I thought the other day in his Zoom call with writers was very upfront, didn't make excuses, just said, I'm going to continue to work. And guys, I still maintain that they're going to need a guy like him. And I don't think he can go out and acquire another Craig Kimbrell. So they're going to continue to give him the ball and give him every opportunity to get out of this. And it does make it easier when you are 10-3 and you're winning ball games. That's the first appearance he's made in a loss. And obviously the game was well out of reach when he came in. But as long as you continue to win, you can still give him opportunities to figure it out.
No, you don't make decisions until you have to. But we see Jose Quintana working his way back. When he does come back, how do you see the rotation working at that point? Who moves into the bullpen? Obviously, there's a lot of work on bullpen construction going on and has been for much of the year.
Well, you've got options. You know, I think when Q comes back, Mike, you could do a little piggyback with a Chatwood or a Mills, potentially. You're not going to expect him to go 6 or 7 innings. And because you've had bullpen issues, you know, maybe you go Q for 3 innings the first time out, and then you bring in one of the right-handers, and 2 guys essentially pitch 9 innings. I think that's very much in play. You could go to a 6-man rotation, but I think with a short season, you probably want to get your main guys as many starts as possible. So it's never a bad thing to have more than 5 starters who you feel confident can get people out. And I think they'll try to be creative here and utilize everybody whenever they can.
Len, how much fun was it to have Mark Grace part of the broadcast? And when you incorporate a third guy like that, and it's at a remote site, how different is it to kind of execute the broadcast?
Yeah, it's been great having Gracie, and I think we've got Rick Sutcliffe this weekend as well. The key for me, and the first day we did it, just to give you a little bit of how the sausage is made, I didn't have eyes on him, and that nonverbal communication is really important. And the second night, we had an isolated feed where I could see him, so I knew when he wanted to chime in that he was ready to go, and I didn't interrupt him. So it is a technical challenge to do it, but this is 2020, and there are a lot of broadcasters broadcasting from studios. Denny Matthews, the Hall of Fame broadcaster of the Royals, is broadcasting games on the radio from his house. Charlie Steiner is doing the same thing with the Dodgers. Both guys did not feel comfortable, and I believe in Denny's case, the doctors said you probably shouldn't be at the ballpark due to your age. So everyone understands that this is the way it has to be. I listened to some of the broadcasts last night. Obviously, Pat, Ron, and Zach are at Wrigley Field while the Cubs are in Kansas City. So it's a challenge. It's a fun challenge. And I've decided that any sort of impediment, technically, to figure this out, whether it's doing games off the monitor or having people remote chime into the broadcast, that we're going to make it work. And I'll do everything I can to make it sound as normal as possible.
Len, we'll let you go just very quickly. I think I heard you say that you've changed your minds on the extra innings.
I did, and it was based on Sunday against the Pirates. I was expecting to hate it, and I found myself on the edge of my seat for both the 10th and the 11th inning. I try to be open-minded, guys, and I think theoretically it just kind of didn't feel right to me. And that particular game, I just bought in. You know, the Pirates kind of went back to little league ball where they just decided we're going to run until you throw us out. And the Cubs did in both innings. And then the Cubs took advantage in the 11th and Baez with the hit. It just the end of the game or something important feels imminent in that moment. And I think in a game that has gotten to the point where there isn't enough action with too many strikeouts, too many delays, too many walks, too many home runs, and not enough balls in play. I do think that that's a way to kind of jumpstart the game that we know and love.
Great stuff, Len. Thanks a ton.
You got Thanks, it. Len. Have a great weekend, guys. Thanks.
You too, buddy. Yep. We'll be watching. I think it really would have gotten exciting if they'd gone to 12 and Kimbrel had come in.
No kidding. And he would have, yeah, especially in that context before everything else had happened. I'm with him. I had the same reaction. I thought I was not going to like it. And then I couldn't walk away from it once I saw, like, okay, what are they going to do next? What's going to happen? Is he going to run here, run there? It was pretty interesting strategy-wise.
But I wonder how you'd feel if they'd lost. You know what I mean? Because if that run does score, you're like, oh, my God, is this stupid? Yeah, I mean, you
what a travesty.
Exactly. All righty, 312-644-6767. Back to your calls. Mully and Hahn, the score.
Into left field. Eloy going back on it at the warning track. Now coming back in, and it bounces off the turf. That's a fair ball. Eloy gets tangled up in the netting. And what? Yelich is to third. He's coming around third on his way home. And he's inside the park with a home run.
Well, unfortunately, Eloy would tell you that he probably should have had that.
For you guys, in terms of effort, he's a big guy. I think he went after it like he could. That's a question for him. I don't see that. I don't think he's a young man that tries to dog it. I'm sure he was embarrassed at the ball that wasn't able to be caught. But I would have to go look at it, Daryl, to be honest, on film to see so I can give you a better idea because in this particular moment, I haven't seen the replay of it to give you a fair assessment, but the last thing I'm going to say is allege is that he didn't give it a good effort to go after and retrieve it. I won't do that.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the score. Our thanks to NBC Sports Chicago for the highlight, and that of course was Rick Renteria on the Zoom after the game, and it was an inside the park. A home run, you know, you had a misplay by Eloy. I would say, generally speaking, that the White Sox have improved defensively and that there is a guy in center field that makes their outfield defense a lot better. But Eloy has had a couple of issues in tracking balls that are hit deep. I'm not going to sit here and tell you they need to pull him out of the outfield the way you seem to think, but you got to find a spot.
Well, okay, hold on. Let me explain that in context. You're kind of twisting the context here. So
me?
Yeah. So I asked a question about whether or not it would be in the best interest for not only the White Sox future, but maybe Aloy's future, to take another look or have a conversation about letting him be the designated hitter this year and the remainder of this year. You have a very modest investment in Edwin Encarnacion, and I know that we were excited about his presence, and he still may be a guy that you can count on. But, Mully, this is a short season, as we know. He's got 30 at-bats and one home run, and he signed for a one-year deal, I think, was $12 million, which is now not going to be all of that. But I think that we've seen two times in what is it, this early part of the season, 20% of the way through this season, Eloy Jimenez put himself in harm's way playing left field. And last night, nobody is questioning his effort. I mean, that's what I think. If Ricky is triggered by that question, it's not his effort. It's the execution. It's getting to balls that typical ordinary outfielders get to. And last night, he played that into an inside the park home run that changed the momentum of that game. There's no doubt about that. So protect from injury, and also it might be the best thing for your baseball team.
No, it's not the best thing for your baseball team because, number one, who's moving in there? Who are you moving in there? Your last outfielder, Adam Engel, right? That's about it. Or maybe you want to move Leary back there when he has to play shortstop and he can't play second base now because he's got to play shortstop until Tim gets back. I just don't see how it makes you better. And if you look at them and you look at the future of their team, they seem to have drafted like 50 guys that can be DH. They seem spoiled for choice at DH moving forward, including Andrew Vaughn coming in, and maybe that's where you move Abreu eventually in the end of his career. But I mean, I just see a team of DHs, and you gotta get him play. He's a young lad still, Eloy, and that's his spot, and he's got to get up and running and get comfortable and play that spot, and then you'll figure it out. I don't think he's – I get it. You know, he ran into the wall earlier, and that was bad, but I think he's going to win you more games than lose you. If you think that was the momentum-changing play and it lost the game for them, I'm not going to argue with you about it, but I think over the long haul, Eloy's going to win a lot more games than lose, and you really need to – you need that bat in the lineup, and you need better bats in the lineup, and the way to do that, the way you put your murderer's row together, is by having your best bats playing positions, and he needs to be a corner outfielder, period, end of story. I think he needs to learn the position more, and that he'll do that with experience, and hopefully he won't injure himself or make too costly a mistake, but I'm staying with that kid.
I appreciate where you're coming from. I really do. This is really not a criticism of Eloy Jimenez. It really is not. It's almost a backhanded compliment because you're making the argument, or I guess I am supporting the idea, that he is too valuable to your future and to your present to expose him in left field. Mully, to me, it's like, let's use a football analogy. It's like a quarterback who's very good at running the ball, but he's also a very good passer, and you want to keep him as healthy and upright as possible. So you tell him, don't run, stop running. And I think with Eloy, you need his bat in the lineup. He means too much to who you are as a team and as a contender, that the more you put him in left field, I fear the more you expose him to the kind of injury he barely avoided last night and he encountered earlier this year already by running into the fence.
Yeah, I mean, I think we just have totally different approaches to it. I just think you got to kind of, you know, again, if you could put together a lineup of DHs, the Sox would be champions. I think they've got a lot of guys that are probably best as hitters, and that's good. There's nothing wrong with that. You need offense, but you also need to have some defense, and I can understand concern about – I just don't worry about his safety. The guy's been playing baseball his whole life. You know, tell him, hey, let the ball drop. Who cares? Just play it in front of you. I mean, that's what I tell him. Stand on the warning track and don't go back anymore. And Louis's got everything else. Okay. I mean, I hate to be rude about it, but I wouldn't expect him to be a great defensive player. And I think that, you know, we see guys – I mean, is Kyle Schwarber a great defensive player? He's got a really strong arm, and he's a DH probably, right? If he were in the American League, he'd be a DH. It's just you got to look at the makeup of your team and where you really need help, and it's not at the DH position, although you're right. Edwin Encarnacion has not started the season strong, but he's had 30-plus home runs for 7 years running, something like that. So, you know, I think that you brought him in for a reason, and I think you have a lot of other options all the way around.
Fair enough. Okay, all this conflict is making me uncomfortable. Let's find something we can agree on. Okay,
so here's conflict. I'm not ready to make that move. That's all.
That's good. I understand, and it's a justifiable position. We can agree on this. On Sunday, Shane Bieber, Lucas Giolito is a huge matchup, and this weekend, pretty good litmus test for a White Sox team that has proven to be pretty good and is going to be in the mix. And now they play the Indians again, and Sunday is one of those marquee matchups on the mound with a duel of respective aces.
I'm worried about Saturday, David, okay? Because your guy, Zach Plesac, is on the bump, and we've got to see who's in the fifth spot for the White Sox, right? Are they going to try to bullpen up a game against a guy that's going to strike out? I mean, he seems to have his best outings against the White Sox. I mean, I think tonight we need the best out of Dylan Cease. You need to stop the losing streak, and you need a big bounce back from Dylan after he had a bad opener and then he came back and did pretty well, but he needs to do well again here, especially against the Indians. So I'm looking forward to him tonight, but I'm worried about Saturday. I haven't even gotten to my fears for Sunday. I'm still trying to take it one worry at a time.
Well, hey, you have every reason to fear the Crown Point product from Ball State, Zach Plesac, the relative of Dan Plesac. I think it's his nephew. And, he pitches well against the White Sox. Sunday is going to be a great matchup. Saturday, though, I do think TBD is on the mound for the White Sox. I think that's probably going to end up being who? Ross Detweiler? Do you think that'll be the case?
Probably. I mean, he'll be the opener? Is that it? Or are they going to let him see how he goes and what happens? But, yeah, I don't know. I look at that game in that spot, and I'm a little concerned. And, you know, the beauty of life is when you know that you can go to bed and your team is going to have a winning record when you wake up, whether they win or not. And we're getting dangerously close to losing that advantage. So I really need the Sox to do well against the Twins. I need the Sox to win at home. I mean, do we have to get those Fox fans in here? What the hell do we need? Don't you hate that?
That was awful.
Don't you hate that?
I have grown to hate it.
Thinking.
Yes, I feel about the virtual fans on Fox the way Ozzie Guillen feels about Nick Swisher. That's the way I feel. I hate them so much. I want them to virtually leave the building.
Oh, that's a thing of beauty and a joy forever. I love that. Yeah, I do. I feel the same way. I'm watching that yesterday, and it's just this bizarre thing. It takes your mind out of the moment, drives you out of your mind. 312-644-6767. We've got the Coop Dog coming up. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.